pre-turkey week.
Sure is.
Welcome, everyone, to this completely unnecessary podcast. Super show! For Super. Friday, the rare Friday recording, November 17th, 2023, alongside Ian Ferguson.
I'm here.
I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be discussing some stuff. We'll be discussing NFTs being worthless. What a shock. We'll be talking about Atari buying Digital Eclipse. Legend of Zelda, live-action movie announced, Ian's worst nightmare. Video game sealed game crash from Carl Jobst. Also, MCU in trouble and how we should fix it. What's going on in your world, Ian? You all right?
Yeah, well, I've been sick, but that's okay. I've gotten sick after the last two conventions, after Portland, and I was in really rad weekend in Florida over the weekend.
How was that? Was that nice?
That was fantastic. It was a lot of fun.
No hurricane
really,
this year?
Really pretty, too. Like, very pretty venue. It wasn't too hot, although it rained all day on Saturday. Anyway, those are good, but I haven't gotten sick from the conventions. Every time I've come home, Vani has gotten sick the previous weekend from something, and I've caught whatever she has gotten. So, we've both been.
She's got a sequester.
Yeah. As we talked about on the bonus bit in the beginning, I've been playing a lot of Othello again, trying to get my skill up to, a reasonably respectable level. The thing I like about Othello is I love chess, but the thing I like about Othello over chess is it's I can usually get a game in on the toilet, whereas chess is, you know, longer.
You can put a game in the toilet. I mean,
yeah, I can get a game in on the toilet
while on the toilet. Okay, yes. Get a game in on the toilet.
And then I've been watching a lot of basketball. My Pistons are 2-10. We're looking great.
Tank again. I mean,
tank. besieged by injuries, but also just poor play. We lost our opener. Then we went on to win two, and we looked good in the opener. And I was like, "This is it, man. This is the year. The play-in Pistons." And
get that 10th seed.
Playing Pistons, and no, it's been rough. So many games that we just haven't been able to clinch. Well, so, yeah, that's been sad.
Warriors started strong, and then they lost five in a row.
Yeah, they're under 500 now, aren't
six
they?
6-7. They were 6-2 and looking like, they look like world beaters right now, or pretty solid, because Steph was carrying them on their back. No one else was scoring 20 points literally behind.
That's the problem. Like, I watched a handful of those games that they won. They won, but what I was looking at was not a strong team. I was looking at Steph literally carrying that team on his fucking back, and that's not sustainable. That's just not sustainable.
It
didn't work last year, and it's not going to work this year.
Well, it worked enough to get past your Kings, but after that, it fell apart against the Lakers. He put them on their back for the Kings series. Something's wrong with Klay Thompson mentally. He's looking like he shouldn't be playing in the NBA. So that about Wiggins, but Wiggins actually was like rebounding and actually starting to work hard, even if he wasn't shooting. Klay Thompson looks like he shouldn't be in the NBA right now. Like, I'm not even using hyperbole. He looks that bad. He looks bad.
No, I mean, I wasn't. When I sent you that send him to the G League text yesterday, I wasn't kidding. I mean,
he looked bad.
He looked awful. 1-for-9 from three.
1-for-10. Whatever. Point and then not just that, though. You. Just chucking up garbage. With like awful.
Oh, yeah. No, everything looked like
with
trash
awful, with awful form. I can even tell as a layman that like his shooting form is off. He's not moving well. He's making bad. He like dribbled off his own foot and leg. He can't get separation from opponents. He needs to talk to like a sports psychologist. I honestly think like he needs like help. Like, he looks lost. And I think it's because he's on a contract year. They did not want to extend him because it's like at this point you can't extend him for anything. So like he's kind of playing for his future being there, which is sorry to say. It's like,
and
really bad.
I've always liked him, but like I see him this year, like he hits a three after having an awful game and he's still like taunts and shit. And it's like, dude, You don't have the taunting rights at the moment.
They got to sit him down and be like, you got to come off the bench or do something, or else you can't play these minutes anymore. He can't start.
I'm surprised he isn't a bench player already.
He can't be starting games or finishing games, because he's been terrible. But anyway, what's good news? Remember that
Analog Pocket had some stuff that they put out those color ones today.
That's how they get you.
Well, I did a quick and dirty deal with my friend this morning, sold my white one and ordered a pink one.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You fell for the pink, play it loud?
And the pink one ships on Monday, so I'll have it next week.
So you upgraded
my buddy a good deal. So
you basically are buying into the ecosystem again with a colored version. Not a glow in the dark, just a colored one.
They only did the glow in the dark ones once, and as neat as it is, I don't think I would have done that. Okay. Because glow in the dark stuff can get weird over time.
Really? It'll
stop eventually. Like that stuff doesn't last forever.
The isotopes disappear, the half-life. I don't know how the hell that stuff works.
I really liked the clear ones. The clear blue one was really nice, but I think the pink one, when I saw it, I was like, fuck. And I was actually thinking about selling my white one when they announced it and trying to get a pink one, but I was like, I don't want to go through this hassle. So my buddy texts me this morning and he's like, I've got a pink Analog Pocket in my shopping cart. He's like, talk me out of it. I was like, I can't talk you out of it. I was like, I wanted the pink one. I was actually going to sell my white one for it. And he goes, I think I'd rather have the white one. He's like, they're still in stock. If you order the pink one, I'll buy your white one. So I ordered the pink one.
There you go.
Selling in my white one.
Get in early. I keep forgetting that we pre-ordered duos and that we're still going to get those. Like I said to myself, did I pre-order us both a duo? Like, and I did.
Like, end of year, they said shipping by end of year. I'm going to need you to be ready to get in your car and go pick those up when they ship, because I am very excited for that. But end of year, and I mean that's only a month and a half left, so we should have those pretty soon. Before Christmas.
They say shipping this year doesn't mean you're going to get it this year, but it means that they're shipping. But I mean, at this point, that means they're on the boat coming over here, so that's good. This is a quick story that we've heard about. I don't know if you ever brought this up before, but I heard about this before, that it was dropped by probably an ex-developer or programmer of the Sony PlayStation Daredevil game that was being developed for the PS2. It was canceled in 2004 and was mostly finished. So very interesting that this got released there, got leaked to the public.
It's always neat to see these. I don't really have a lot to say on every one that gets, released or unearthed, but I wonder if it just had something to do with, when was the movie?
Wake me up. It was 2003, I believe. It was after Spider-Man.
Okay, I wonder if it just got shelved because the movie had such a horrible, everyone hated the movie.
Really? It did well at the box. I remember that was like the first of the new guard of comic book movies, X-Men, Spider-Man, Daredevil. It did well enough to get the Elektra spinoff. That was terrible.
I guess I never saw it. Maybe I'm misjudging its importance.
The director's cut's supposed to be a lot better because they have a lot more lawyer subplot with what's his name that just passed away, the rapper, from Gangster's Paradise, Coolio. Coolio's has a whole client subplot that was not in the theatrical version at all. I mean, they cut probably 20 to 30 minutes out of the movie just on that alone. Yeah, so never saw that. I thought the movie was all right. I liked Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin. There was actually no, when that was rolled around, people were like, no, there's no controversy about, race changing, whatever. Like, no, he's a big hulking guy. I remember that. Like, people were all for that back then. Nowadays, I don't know how it would go. But back then, that was fine. I actually didn't like the redesign of Bullseye. Having it like seared into his forehead, I thought that was kind of cheesy and dumb. It's like, I'm an assassin. How do you go unnoticed? I don't know. I'm just going to have it fucking seared into my forehead, a target. It's like, it's so fucking dumb. It was so much better in the Daredevil series 3. Bullseye was so much better. Obviously, because that series was awesome. You should be happy that they're now back in production on the new Daredevil series.
I just keep hearing that. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be happy when I actually see it.
And the Echo trailer, I was saying I had no interest in Echo at all, because who the hell is Echo to me? She just showed up in Hawkeye. Trailer looked pretty good with your boy Vince. I mean, I'm kind of into it. It looked bloody and violent. And I have zero interest in MCU stuff at this point, which we'll get into later. But I was like, I might give it a shot. I might give it a shot. You might have hooked me for that with the Danoff. Yeah, I mean, he's good. He's always good.
He's fantastic.
Always underrated. I just watched again, even though it's sacrilege probably to Frank, the Magnificent Seven remake with Denzel Washington. It's not horrible. There are some issues to it, but D'Onofrio's in it, and he's obviously great. He plays like a, you know, like a mountain man, basically, in that. You ever see that
before? I have not seen that.
It's a good cast. It's a very good cast. No, like I said, it's one of those like remakes that, well, none of them are really necessary. But it's a classic story, obviously, and it has a great, great cast in it. In a shock, 95% of NFTs are now are dead. They're worthless. There's no one buying. The vast majority of these have been minted the past years.
Yep.
This comes from Dap Gamble without an E.com. It's just called Dead NFTs, the evolving landscape of the NFT market. Evolving as in evolving to nothing.
So I think I read this last week or 2 weeks ago. Maybe it's pulling data from a different one that I had read, but yeah, it's crazy. So one of the big bold things that they highlight is of the 73,257 NFT collections they identified, 69,795 of them have a market cap of zero.
That's not a good cap to have. You never want a market cap of zero.
No.
Zero trading.
Yeah, a lot of the investments are worthless. Obviously, there are some up top that are still holding some monetary value because there's enough of a shaky framework together to keep some of the things from crashing.
The
but
apes.
The
apes.
Yeah, the apes.
Cyberpunks or something?
Digital Punks was another one.
That's the only ones I know, which means you're bad if I only know two of them as casual person.
But yeah. And it's funny, every once in a while I'll still sign into that hell site that is Twitter, and I'll go trolling for like NFT stuff. Like I'll usually start with looking at a Web3 is going great tweet and then look at the replies, because it's the only time where you want all the blue checked replies right up top, because it's just all the idiots who are trying to convince each other that NFTs are fine and they're not going away. And I get a little bit of schadenfreude just from watching these idiots fucking fall all over themselves, trying to convince themselves that they weren't, you know, bamboozled. My favorite thing that happens these days with NFT comments is people who talk about the good old days. Remember the early times? 2021?
I was going to say, it's been 2 years. So like, what are you talking about?
At most, it's been 3 years.
Like the good old days, what, when we still couldn't go anywhere yet because of the pandemic? What, like, what do you mean? That's why
if you bought a hamster when NFTs became popular, that hamster might still be alive.
A goldfish might be still alive.
Yeah.
This is a weird article. I'm going to call it an article because in the middle of it, well, first of all, they went over the huge fucking ridiculous amount of energy that was been wasted by minting this shit, let alone buying. You're minting all this shit on the blockchain that's never going to be touched or utilized. Just so fucking awful to begin with. But the NFTs with real use cases, here are just some of the many examples of practically. I thought they were trolling. Gaming, unique in-game assets can be bought, sold, and used. And we said before, like you said, you don't need that. Preserving, are you hearing this, Ian?
I'm turning my light on. Yes.
Preserving cultural heritage.
Yes.
NFTs can be used to digitize and protect cultural artifacts, giving them a unique, immutable status on a blockchain. So what are you saying? You take a fucking picture of like an old coin or something? Or what do you mean? Like, what the hell?
They used to use this as examples, and then the cultural artifacts we have are fucking apes with green ooze dripping out of their
ears.
Like,
what are you talking about?
It's a cultural artifact, but not an important or good one.
I thought they meant like a real cultural artifact, like something from someone's cultural heritage. Awful. Let's see. Real estate. This is great. Owned properties can be tokenized as NFTs, allowing for the sale of the property on blockchain platforms, which would provide a pathway to much easier selling. Listen, folks, I've been critical, not publicly, about the way real estate's done by the fees, how it's all monopoly. There was a huge class action lawsuit that came out a week and a half ago, Ian, about that, that said that the real estate association has conspired to keep like fees high and everything, and they got dinged for $1.8 billion in the state of Missouri. It might change. It might change how real estate is bought and sold going forward. Because I always said to myself, why is it 6% that you give up 3% to the selling agent and buyer across the board? Doesn't matter if it's a home that's worth $100,000 or $2 million or $3 million. It doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make sense for the amount of time and effort goes into it. Plus all the other weird underwriting fees that go into it. The sellers pay a lot of money when they sell a place, a lot.
Right.
So that has never been really been looked at. Nowadays, there's like 1% fees for like Redfin and things like that, where you kind of do some of the work yourself. And so there's been changes slowly coming. The point is this: as shitty as our system is, I still trust that over putting my property on the fucking blockchain where I can click on a link by accident and have my home, automatically transferred to some person living in Eastern Europe that hacked me. You know, like I don't want to live in that world. I'd rather still have safeguards.
Yes.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Am I crazy for saying that?
And we've talked about this all before. I mean, it is. It's absolutely ridiculous. But there isn't enough demand to keep up with supply. That's the other thing that they're noticing. Have you noticed that there are still people still announce like NFT drops?
Really? Who's buying them at this point?
No one. I think everyone just keeps putting another one out in hopes that the next one is going to catch. Throwing that good money after bad.
What's the cost to mint an NFT? Like, what's the actual cost if I did an NFT of 1,000?
I mean, that I couldn't tell you right now. I have no idea.
But you only need probably like 10 idiots to buy it to make up for the cost. I don't.
I'm assuming it's not nearly as much as it used to be, because I think it's all relative to the value of Ethereum and the
and that's
coins.
Dropped. Is that what you mean? Okay.
I'm gonna look. Actually, I have not looked at the Ethereum.
The value.
Oh, thank God the soundboard's back. Oh boy.
Because I would have to assume Ethereum itself has tanked.
I mean, all crypto has been down for the past year at least.
Okay, it's 1,961 per unit. I actually have no idea what that compares to. I think it was like 2,500 at some point.
What is Bitcoin? I looked at Bitcoin price in a while. It dropped down to like, it's up to 36 again, and it's still way lower than the peak, but I'm surprised it got that high again.
Yeah, what was the peak, like 55?
60. 63. 64, November 12th, 2021.
That was the highest.
Then it fell till a year ago, it was at 16,000. Oh, this is a pump. It was at 26,000 a couple months ago. Now it's gone up 36,000. They're pumping it. Get in early. Well, it's all a fucking game.
Bitcoin is it's not too big to fail, but it's bigger and will fail harder but slower. There's enough people there to keep that propped up.
Did I tell you I got into a heated argument with someone at a poker game, an in-person poker game, because they were pushing Bitcoin. No, but everyone brought up the same points about, well, in El Salvador they're using it. And I said, do you know how much they got fucked by buying it in like countries like that? Like, are you kidding?
Yeah, no kidding.
And you still can't buy and sell things with it easily. You never will. So it's never going to be a real currency. So you have to admit it's not a currency at this point. It's just a holder of wealth. It's like the same tired arguments. It's ridiculous.
Well, and I have noticed that people don't use the currency arguments anymore because
it's ridiculous.
It's impossible to use it as a currency. There's no fucking way to use it as a currency.
They just go back to the same old, well, it's a way that the government doesn't control your money. And it's like, listen, asshole, my money's insured by the bank. And the government insures my money in a bank account. My money's not insured in crypto or anything else if something weird happens. Or something disappears or it's gone. There's no insurance for that. No insurance for fraud, things that happen or anything.
And they're the first people who ask people for help as soon as something goes wrong. They love the idea of the lawless nature.
Libertarianism with money. Yeah. Deregulation.
Once it actually bites them in the ass, they're not happy anymore.
Someone stole all my apes.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yes.
You know where Bitcoin's not accepted? UltimateNintendo.com. We want greenbacks, credit cards, PayPal there, where you can buy for
chips, lettuce.
Black Friday is coming up. You can buy certain NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks. I'm not saying the NES book's going to sell out tomorrow, but you better get in early because it's going to sell out, the third print run of the NES. And we got stickers, RBI baseball stickers. We got CU podcast enamel pins. We got things of that nature, all at UltimateNintendo.com. I'm on Twitch every Wednesday. Ian will never be there. Twitch.tv/ContraCode, watching the greatest 70s, 80s, and 90s commercials. That's fun as well. And Cameo, once a month, someone requests a Cameo. That was definitely a pandemic thing as well with Cameo.
Well, it was a pandemic thing, but Pat, I mean, there is a finite audience of people who want a Cameo from anyone, and once that's played out, it's
oh, done. Sure, it's not going to be every day forever, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it was hot when it started. It was hot. Everyone was doing it. And I put out a couple NES Punk videos. I went back and looked at the NES Punk records, Ian. I have a vault. I have like a file cart system.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time ever I put out two NES Punk videos full, not like Ian sitting there, me recording parts 1 through 7 of my collection video. Two NES Punk videos came out in a little over 2 weeks. That had never happened before in 15 years.
Nice.
Ever. And I don't know why.
Still. Yeah, I was going to say, that was really quick.
Yeah. But I think the record before that was like same calendar month, like November 1st and November 30th, like 4 full weeks. Never happened before. So go check out Forgotten NES Games. I don't know if Ian saw that one. That acts as my de facto 15th anniversary video. And you can watch what Ian definitely didn't see, a review of Shark Shark.
Pat, I reviewed Shark Shark. I don't need to watch another review of Shark
Well,
Shark.
You haven't.
I will watch the 15th year anniversary.
You still haven't seen the 15th anniversary? It's been out for 3 weeks.
No, I have not.
Jeez, you hate me, Ian.
I don't hate you. I just don't watch anyone's videos.
I don't know why you do a podcast. I don't do a podcast with someone you don't like. I don't want you to do that. Microsoft AI generative bullshit announced. I didn't really read this. I edited the doc and I'm like, I can just read it. Microsoft is partnering with InWorld AI to create Xbox game dev tools for generative AI characters, storylines, and more.
Great. Sounds awful.
At Xbox, we believe that with better tools, creators can make even more extraordinary games. Great. So you'll have AI dialogue that'll suck ass. Like, that's basically what's going to happen. We're only like one or two like court cases away from putting a kibosh on a lot of generative AI stuff for entertainment. I mean, like, it's going to happen at some point where it's going to be challenged for copyright grounds, that you can't just plug in shit and then build off other people's work for images, for writing. And already, the Screen Actors Guild and the SAG-AFTRA just said you can't use AI shit. And I just saw someone saying that, was it Steam or something that said like games have to be marked if they use AI in its involvement? Who came out with that? I didn't add that to the document.
But I heard rumbling. Let me look and see. I heard rumblings of that, but I don't. Steam and AI games, because I haven't seen it on any games yet.
But this
okay, so Steam blocking generative AI. It is doing this was announced in September at some point. So I guess it was they have banned it.
So they banned AI what Microsoft
developed
is,
games. They, so I don't know if like AI art in a game. Okay. It's specifically saying no to AI made games. So I don't know if that means an AI is making the game or if it includes the art.
Sure. I thought I saw something about at least the art, because it'll get to the point where you'll be able to make a game without any original art. It just will. You'll get to that point where you just ask, what the hell's the big one? What's the big art one? I forget. There's like two or three of them. Hey, make me all these assets. like that's it. And that'll be weird. And plus you're just ripping off other art to create your new art.
Okay. So here's what it said. Valve silence was broken by a developer posting screenshots of conversations with the company. Reddit user PotterHarry97 posted that he tried to submit a video game on Steam that contained 2 to 3 AI generated assets. So yeah, it looks like if you used AI to make the art or something like that, it'll get banned, which is fine.
How do they know that it's AI? Is there something that can tell if the image is AI?
I couldn't tell you. Oh. That I don't know. I don't know enough about it.
I'm sure teachers have tools now that they can tell if it was ran through like ChatGPT for like homework stuff.
I don't know if they can. There are programs that I believe you can run a paper through.
Sure.
That I read that will kind of give you an idea like what percent chance likely is this to be AI written.
That's the world. That's what we're using our tech for, to cheat on the homework and porn and make porn images. Basically, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing too, huh?
It's everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember, technology always is used for porn almost immediately. Any new
sure,
tech.
But that's usually like pushed out into the public, and I'm surprised I haven't seen anything about that.
Well, I'll just say if you're on certain, you know, sites, you'll see like a little advertisement. It's like create your own AI porn and shit like that. It'll probably like ask you like.
I mean, I'm occasionally on those sites. I just always thought that was bullshit. I just figured that was something that you clicked on to get a virus on your computer.
Now we both have homework. That's all.
All right. Good. Great. We have homework.
You can create your perfect Meredith Baxter Burney AI for that. So the following.
Always think it's Meredith Baxter Burney, but it never was.
You said it was.
No, it's not.
Unless you were misspoken.
The person that I was talking about was someone completely different.
So I misheard Meredith Baxter Burney somehow? Is that what you're saying? I misheard that?
That was when I was looking up Phoebe Cates.
Who is it?
Phoebe Cates.
Phoebe Cates.
I have the picture saved on my laptop.
So you're saying I confuse Phoebe Cates with Meredith Baxter Burney? You didn't actually say that? Is that what you're saying right now?
Yes.
That's crazy, Ian. That's fucking crazy. They're like the two opposite people.
I know, but I have no idea where the Meredith Baxter Burney thing came from with you.
I believe you said it one time. And she was a cutie. She probably still is. I mean, they were actually not that older than like Michael J. Fox.
If they had kids, they were
not even 20. You know, they were like 16 when they had them as hippies. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by the new retroware Imprison City, developed by Programancer. It's now out on all consoles like Nintendo Switch, Xbox, PlayStation. It's also on PC at the Steam and Epic Games stores. Prison City is a dystopian, action-packed side-scroller with tight mechanics and intricate level design. Battle techno-terrorists with your chakram and grenades, eat hot dogs for health, and locate contacts to help take down bosses.
It pays tribute to late NES games like Power Blade, Shatterhand, and Vice Project Doom, with the map approach and style of the Mega Man games. There are also a ton of action movie references from Escape from New York, to Terminator, to RoboCop. And it's set in the far-off year of 1997, just like the game came out in 1990 for the NES. I got my hands dirty with it a little bit, and I've really enjoyed my time. The controls are super snappy. The graphics look exactly like a 1992 NES game. I mean, it's really pretty to look at. The tunes are jamming, and the main weapon, the chakram, is actually pretty controllable. You can fire it at an angle. You can hold it out in the air. I really enjoyed playing it. It definitely has a Power Blade vibe, if you've ever enjoyed that game.
You can get Prison City today. It's available on all systems. Find it on Steam or your favorite console. If you're watching on YouTube, you can click on the link in the description below. Anyway, this is
moving on.
This was news that came out of nowhere like an RKO. Atari acquiring Digital Eclipse. Obviously, Digital Eclipse worked with Atari with the amazing, came out about a year ago already, the Atari 50 collection.
Correct. I don't know if it was really, was it already?
I believe it was last year because the 50th anniversary was 72, 2000.
Yeah, holy shit. Okay.
Yeah, this year is a weird fucking year. I can't tell if it's gone slow or fast. It just seemed like it's almost like a lost year this year to me. Anyway, so they did an announcement about it. So the current stuff is going forward, which is good. You know, it's going to be nothing like weird, like they just stopped working on stuff.
So I'm going to hedge my bets and say that this is not a bad thing for them specifically. I don't like it when developers or when publishers buy up development studios. I don't. And it's hard for me to, you know, just wave it away for this one.
Sure.
However, based on their announcement, which I will believe at face, I know people who work there. I've talked to a number of people who work there. I don't think Digital Eclipse is a developer that would have agreed to the buyout had they not had some certainty that they would be allowed to continue in the way that they are continuing. I am still nervous, but I do, like I said, the announcement reads well to me. The big thing that I would have been concerned about is digital clips only allowed to work on Atari properties. That's absolutely not the case. And it makes sense. Atari is not, whatever people want to think about modern Atari, and clearly we think a lot of things about them, they are no longer really a company that is just trying to, and whether or not this is a good idea or not, they are no longer a company that is just trying to promote their own games in the past. You know, whether we believe it or not, they've, you know, we've gone over press releases from Atari where they talk about re-entering the new age. They've been buying up IP left and right. So I don't think Atari, obviously they will always try to lean back on some of the stuff that they have, but I don't think they're really concerned about it just being the image of Atari we know. I don't think they really care about it just being remakes of Atari games anymore. I do think there is probably truth to that, that they, I don't really think they give a shit what they work on. I imagine it'll probably be more focused in this game history style, though, which is fine.
Sure.
I think we're going to see a lot more Gold Master, and we're going to see a lot more, you know, Atari 50th anniversary type stuff.
Yeah, so right now, this came out with a Karateka Gold Series, the first one.
Which is great.
And they had the Wizardry game, which is the Wizardry collection just came out, right?
No, it's not a collection. So I've been playing that. The first Wizardry, Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord, is a graphical remaster of the original Wizard.
Is that out already?
Well, it's in early access. It's been out. It's been out for like 3 months.
Okay.
And I've been playing it, and it looks great. And it's funny because it's Wizardry. It runs off the exact same rules as Wizardry. Everything you can break in the original Wizardry, it's all built on top of the original code. So
just,
whatever you could break or do in the original Wizardry is there. It's a fun game, but at this point in time, playing through Wizardry like you're a brand new baby to it is a soul-crushing experience. So the fun becomes, how are you going to break the game this time with nicer graphics on top of it?
Yeah, it's a 40-year-old engine, basically what you're saying.
Yeah, it is.
They're putting graphics,
you know, you can break the shit out of it. There is stuff that's completely unfair. Like, so yeah, break it. Pick up the, like, load up an FAQ and tear it apart.
Yeah, so that's going to appeal to, obviously, that certain hardcore dungeon-crawling audience that loves that sort of game.
Right. I think they're really going to kind of narrow in their focus on this classic era stuff.
So this was unnerving to me. I wasn't upset. I wasn't happy. This makes me extremely uncomfortable when I heard about this. Because Atari has searched for the past 10 years for a way to make money.
Yes.
In any possible way they could. Crypto, NFTs that we've covered on the podcast only two years ago. Harebrained ideas for casinos and hotels. And the Atari VCS that came out was not good. And yes, this is a semi-changing of the guard with Wade Rosen being involved, but it's still the same company. And this is also, as a caveat, I should say, this is also a French company at this point. And that matters not a lot, but it also means that the control of all this stuff is never going to be centered around. That's nothing to do with Atari anyway. But like, Atari hasn't been Atari for 40 years at this point.
Well, that was kind of my point. I'm not surprised that they aren't restricted to Atari licenses, because Atari isn't the Atari they once were.
Atari is trying to now be, we are the old game company.
Yes.
For whatever that means. So we're going to buy Night Dive Studios. We're going to buy Moby Games, which I still can't figure out how they make money doing that. And they paid $1.5 million for that. And I said, I don't know what they're doing.
I also wonder where the fuck all the money is coming from.
That's what I'm going to get to in a second. They paid a lot for that. They just bought Atari Age. I have no clue. But for what I hear, one of the main reasons they bought Atari Age, or one of the reasons they bought Atari Age, is because then they have instant access to a whole bunch of Atari homebrewers, homebrew programmers that can help them make games to sell.
I guess that makes sense.
Again, though, you're not going to sell a lot of those individual games, but at least you have access. They've been leaning into that. They've been doing their cartridge. So they are desperate for a way to make money. because this is they have investment money, obviously. This is a penny stock company. They are it's 10 cents on the exchange, wherever Atari SA is traded. It's a French company. So like they are they probably have gotten an infusion of money the past couple of years and are now like, we really need to make money or else I don't know what we're gonna do. So this is a gambit, in my opinion, to do this, because otherwise we always said, how can Atari make money? Like it's a zombie brand almost. People don't even can't even tell you, like Ian will say, people can't even tell you what Atari actually made. They'll point to Atari.
And that was one of the funniest things that, you know, happened. I mean, anyone who works in a retro video game store will tell you that someone walks in who doesn't know a lot about games, even some people who do know about games, they look at an Atari and they go, oh, I had favorites on there. I loved the Atari games, you know, River Raid and Barnstorming and
Keystone Capers. And it's like none of those were made by Atari. Like their bread and butter by that point was the arcade games. Then it's a different kind of company that did those ones we love in the mid 80s, so like 720 and APB. So it's like, all right, it's a mess. The rights things are a mess. So it's unnerving because now you have like Digital Eclipse has helped usher in this like new golden era of retro video game, you know, compilations. And now it's eventually going to be in danger. We are now at the tail end, or hopefully tail end, of all these studios destroying game developer companies that they just purchased the past year or two. It's in the news.
I hope.
It's in the news every other week. I was going to put a link up. There's been over 6,000 jobs lost in the game industry biz this year so far. 6,000 jobs. And these were all companies that said, the line can only go up because it's a pandemic and everyone's forced to buy games and entertainment. So we're going to buy up. It's now a war to buy up all as many game dev and publishers we can. But there's been a downturn. So what do? You fire people that thought that they're going to be in a great place. And they made a deal thinking, well, we're going to have resources. We're going to get, obviously, the people higher up and stockholders get paid out. And this can always turn bad. And that's why it's unnerving. That's why I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow or a year from now. It's always now going to be in the back of your mind.
But it is a concern. It's always a concern. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why I said, you know, I think that the people there are particularly smart and had some conversations, but you never know what a company is going
there
to do.
There is zero guarantee when you're a publicly traded company what happens to you.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Zero guarantee. There's actually a videogamelayoffs.com, which is now depressing that has to exist. Because now it's being updated every week. Ubisoft Montreal, 135 folks gone on the 7th. Free Radical Design, 80 people gone on November 8th. 30 people fired from Digital Extremes on the 9th. The 13th, Amazon Games. This was a news story. Amazon Games basically laid off most of that. 180 people gone. It's every week. Yeah. There are small and large. Epic Games laid off 830 people end of September. I didn't know this site existed until today, and it's really startling. And again, a lot of these were acquired the past couple years during the pandemic. So there you go. Hope it doesn't happen, but it's out of your hands once you're no longer a private company. They can tell you what to do, when to do it.
Fair.
You know, that's the bottom line. And they went through a list of this. Atari SA sold off a bunch of shit 10 years ago that they bought. So I'm not saying it's going to happen again, but they have a history. They were bankrupt 10 years ago and sold off a bunch of shit in order to keep going. So there you have it. Ian's worst nightmare happened, which he on the show said would be he would boycott. He would start up a digital e-signature. No, he wouldn't.
Well, yeah, remember when those were hot than I used to be, but I still I still don't love this concept of a live action Zelda movie.
Remember online petitions? Is that still a thing? That seemed like that was a fad.
I mean, they never really were a thing. I mean, if you get my drift. They were never really a thing. They never were effective. Let me put it that way.
Well, no, it's because it's just an e-signature. I mean,
yes.
Not even.
Slacktivism.
This is from Variety. Y'all saw us in the Hollywood backup. Oh, that's Hollywood Reporter's your source for Hollywood news. Nintendo is developing a live action film. It was announced by Shigeru Miyamoto. This is Miyamoto. I have been working on the live-action film of The Legend of Zelda for many years now with Abe Arad-san, who has produced many mega-hit films.
I remember someone posted, they were like, I like this tweet because it gives me the image of Miyamoto just walking by someone's computer and being like, I need to tell him something real quick.
Abe Arad-san has a very... very mixed history with producing films.
I looked it up.
Oh, I knew the name because he fucked Sam Raimi in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
By forcing Venom in. Like, that was all him. Like, he has a very, very weird history when it comes to some of these movies. He's still marked as producer for the Spider-Man movies, the latest ones, as a legacy thing because he helped produce them when they came out. Somehow, I forget how, but he got involved with almost all of the pre-MCU superhero ones from the 2000s. It was all him. Daredevil, Hulk, Punisher, Spider-Man 2, Elektra, Man-Thing. I forgot that was a thing. The Fantastic Four movies. Remember the Ghost Rider films with Nicolas Cage? But I still have to see. I haven't seen those.
I haven't seen those either. There was multiple?
So, oh, yeah, there was two. Spirits of Vengeance. There was two Nicolas Cage ones. You didn't know that?
Jesus Christ, no.
And the second one came out. Remember, the second one came out when right before the MCU was like, oh, remember, before Disney bought it. That was 2011. So it was still like, what are we doing? We want to do an Avengers film. And then, was that bought 2010? And anyway, remember there was supposed to be a Punisher? Remember there was Punisher Warzone that came out?
Yeah.
About 10, 11 years ago? So anyway, this is unnerving as well because of that alone.
Directed
by Wes Bell, who helmed the Maze Runner trilogy. I have no idea what those are like. I heard they were all right if you read the books. And upcoming Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, written by Jurassic World screenwriter. Okay, I didn't see Jurassic World. Was that a good script?
The first Jurassic World was fine.
Okay.
I liked it. I didn't like it enough to see the rest of the Jurassic Worlds.
I just saw the last one because it was on TV and it was like, oh, it has the old cast in it. I'll turn it on. It was just nostalgia bait, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I'd watch it for free if it was on Netflix or something, but I didn't make myself go out to the theaters for him.
It was harmless, the last one, from what I saw. I didn't see the other two.
I heard the second one was particularly bad.
Fallen Kingdom or something it was called?
Yeah.
I don't know. This is all about the director. It's all about the script. It's all about who they cast. Like, I don't want them to go a Chris Pratt route and get the safest fucking choice, because I'll be annoyed if they do that. I will be annoyed like, oh, we're going to get who we think is popular, even though that's not going to sell the movie. Chris Pratt did not sell people seeing the Super Mario Brothers movie.
No. You didn't need anyone to help you sell the Super Mario Brothers movie. And that's the thing. There was no reason to go with the safe bet when no one needed... No one was convinced to go see the Mario Brothers. No one was on the fence and like, I love that Chris Pratt, so I'm going to go see Chris Pratt. No one did that. I can get over the fact that they're going to give Link a voice and whatever. I'm genuinely upset that it's not animated in one way, shape, or another.
Yeah, and it's a rumor.
Live action, that's my big sticking point.
Well, I think the question would be, if you did this, would they be, obviously they want to do multiple films, would they be all the same game universe, or would they jump around like the games do? What would be the safest thing to do with that? I don't know.
Right, because when you start thinking about sequels and stuff like that, are you going to, you know, kind of take that from the games where it's just kind of like different eras and shit, or are you going to try to keep a running storyline?
Because you had the first two games that were a sequel, then after that they did whatever the hell they wanted, right? And then some I think bounced back to the same universe. I don't know enough about Zelda. There's been a billion games, but like, what do you do there? I don't know. I don't want like, oh, people say, oh, they gotta cast Tom Holland or something. Like, if they do that, I will not only not see this movie, I don't want to say anti-Nintendo, but I'll be like so down on anything else they think about. They can't just say, well, what's going to help us get like 2% of people to come see it because it's a known entity? You can't do that. Like, you can't. You have to go for someone who is going to knock the part out of the park, in my opinion. You can't just do that.
Fair.
I mean, that's what they used to do with movies, right? They used to try. They like, there's no more bankable stars anyway. There's no more. There's almost no such thing as a movie star anymore. It doesn't matter anymore. Like you can't sell it anymore. Based upon
we do star have a power. Bunch of young men that do tend to just kind of fill a template role.
But they're not movie, like they're not like, even the last Mission Impossible did not do as well as people thought it was going to do. Huh. And Cruise is like one of the last movie stars that you can say like is supposed to like everyone sees the movie because of him. So yeah, we'll see what happens there, Ian. I'm not a... another news real quick. Pedro Pascal supposedly is up for Mr. Fantastic. We will see. Again, that's kind of a laziest choice just because, oh, he's the Mandalorian already.
I don't know. I think he could do that. I think he's got character to him that could make that an interesting portrayal. Yes,
but there's more than five actors out there.
Yes, there are.
Sure. That's the point. And he's doing now Mandalorian, which is, and he does The Last of Us. And it's like, there are other actors that can do these parts. And it's the same thing.
The Mandalorian, I think, is wrapped though, isn't it? Wasn't season four supposed to be the end, or are they going to, or season three, or are they going to keep going?
I think they're going to keep going, but maybe Pedro Pascal won't be the star of it anymore. It'll be other characters, I think.
All right. Yeah.
And maybe he'll just come back every now and then. So my point is that we have to try other people. That's all.
Oh, sure. I'm not against that.
But no, I'll probably do great in the role. But yeah. It has to be a good movie because I don't know if Frank's going to be around for a third reboot. So you got to, I mean, come on, you're killing me here. I don't have the heart. He's never seen the shitty one that came out in 2015. I think that would kill him. I can't show him that one. If you want to listen to us jabber more, Ian, we have a Patreon, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast.
You go there.
Got it.
You get a writing. And you see us, hear us talk about Othello and chess technology, an AI for 20 minutes. That's what we got going on there. And we do a hangout once a month, which is coincidentally going to happen on Saturday the 18th. So get in early.
Please thrilled to the Othello talk.
Yes. And get in early at patreon.com/CU podcast. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by True Classic Tees. The holidays are here, and that means one thing. It's time to break out your favorite jeans, t-shirts, and sweaters from True Classic. True Classic's ultra-comfortable, perfect-fitting essentials make for the perfect gift for the men in your life. Everything they make is crafted with premium fabrics to help you look and feel great anytime, anywhere. And right now, for a limited time this November, they're giving our listeners a special Black Friday deal all month long. Up to 60% off site-wide at trueclassics.com/CU podcast.
Let's talk about the t-shirts for a second. I've said it before. They're amazing. True Classic completely re-engineered how t-shirts fit. They're tighter around the arms, chest, and shoulder, but have a looser fit in the torso. The fabric is ultra soft and makes for a comfortable base layer on chilly days.
They also offer their comfort jeans, and they're my new go-to. They've got that classic look, but mold perfectly to my body with the perfect four-way stretch for maximum comfort. When it comes to sweatshirts, their hoodies and crews will become your go-to for casual Fridays, game days, and trips to the gym. They have nice zip-up hoodies that you can wear every single day. And if you're looking for a more formal look, they've got you covered there too. They've just launched five different styles of button-up shirts, a new sweater that feels soft and comfortable, and fleece jackets to warm up during the cold weather.
Seriously, whatever you choose, you can't go wrong with True Classic. All their clothing, from t-shirts, jeans, button-ups, is designed to be versatile and work with your lifestyle, so you can look and feel your best all damn day. In fact, True Classic is so committed to their products that they even have a 100% perfect fit guarantee and easy returns.
Men, this is the perfect gift for you, but also a gift for her. So if you're ready to upgrade your closet, shop now with our exclusive link at trueclassictees.com/CU podcast and save up to 60% off site-wide during their November holiday sale. End the year with holiday cheer. Thanks to True Classic. Ian?
Yeah.
Carl Jobst, who's heavily covered the WADA scandal and sealed graded game market, how it's been propped up with alleged fraudulent things and tomfoolery and chicanery, I could say.
Chicanery, that's about right.
He put out an update video. Update.
Update.
Since he hasn't really done a video on this in about a year, since that Mad Dog Gaming Moby lookalike guy who attacked both me and him, if you remember. That was really the last time that he put out a video talking about this stuff. So he wanted to do an update video the way we have from time to time. There's actually a few games that appeared in his video that we've talked about a few months ago in the summer. Remember we talked about it? I think late summer as well. So he talks about the graded game market. Prices are down 50 to 90% in 2 years. We've talked about that. We found a lot of games that were down 70, 80%. And that was without even deep searching. That was just looking at pick a popular game, click sold listings on Heritage Auctions, and see all the prices scroll up. Which I'll get into that you can't do that anymore, which I'll get into later.
The fact that they've eliminated that is telling.
The fact that they eliminated the ability for you to like look at all the Super Mario Brothers 3 sold listings and see them all lined up. Anyway, he said this was an interesting editorial. Speculators add nothing of value to society. I chuckled. I just think that's funny. And they really don't. And this is something interesting as trying to use wealth to create an artificial arbitrage system. He said, use their wealth as a weapon to steal money from others. And that was an interesting thought. We never really hammered the nail that hard about what happens with all these collector markets. But what you really do is, yes, you get the upper echelon of society, those that with money to burn try to make themselves richer by getting into these markets and fucking with it and manipulating them.
Well, that's always been the case. I mean, that's a common thing is that once you're rich, it's easy to get richer because you have all the money to take these risks with, and one pops off, then you get more money, but you're not missing the money that you lost.
Sure.
The reality of it is, the dentist or whatever. I don't know about him. Anyways, there are plenty of people who got into this who are losing hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, and they are just going to shrug it off and move on to the next thing.
Sure. But they aren't the ones that created this bubble. They're the ones that got trapped in it. Some of the people that had money got trapped in it, and the other ones are the ones that some people got richer or rich when they discovered they could, sell a bunch of old Atari games for, $3,000 a pop that are worthless. So the point is, though, is that in order to coordinate this effort, it's people with money have to coordinate this effort. We saw that. We saw the Pawn Star stuff. We saw, the people behind Heritage Auctions partnering with WADA Games. We saw that. So Carl went through about a dozen examples, which we'll go through real quick here. Some I'll stop on more than others. The first was a Madden Sega Genesis from 1990. I love you, Carl, but you were incorrect slightly. You said it was the first Madden game. It was the first Madden console game. The first one was on at the Apple II. If you watch the video game years, you'll see that. But anyway, which was 88, I believe.
88.
So Madden Sega Genesis, this is a cardboard first printing, $480,000. They said it was from the offices of John Madden. Carl noted they did a video holding it up saying, this is the first one that's come up for sale like this.
I kind of remember that one going up because I remember the offices thing.
Yes. And this was what's interesting about it. And there's nothing special. There's nothing like, it's not signed by Madden. They gave you a certificate of authenticity that it came from Madden's office, I don't think. But either way, it's just the same regular copy you could have bought when it first came out. What I confirmed though, Ian, was that this was the first copy they ever auctioned off. They made sure that the first one they ever auctioned off was the one that came from Madden's offices.
Yeah.
So they
recall that too.
They suckered in some asshole who didn't know better to be like, well, my God, it must be hard to find. They did a fucking video talking about this being important, and it's from the office of Madden. And that's the only way it got to close to half a million. Because the next one that came up a year later, Carl told us, dropped to $21,000, a 96% drop. And you can't tell me that's because, this one didn't come from Madden's offices. That's not why. So that was bad. Next one was a Tomb Raider PS1. And I put my note here, so dumb because they're plastic cases. And it's like you're not really protecting much, but all right. $144,000.
Well, you got to protect the seal. I mean, again, this has nothing to do with the actual game. It has to do with protecting the seal. You're protecting the plastic.
Sure. That's protecting something that's already protected. It's like layers of protection. $144,000 for a 9.4A. A better condition one, a 9.4A++, means the cellophane was better, went for not even $5,000. 9.4%, a 97% drop. We should have probably looked into these PlayStation ones a lot more, because we always said once you get to the late 90s, these games are a lot more plentiful in sealed format. Once you get
Just looking at that one and thinking, I mean, that one is particularly dumb. It's not like they're all over the place, but the notion of someone stumbling upon a box of sealed Tomb Raiders, Black Label, I mean, is not, it's not out of the realm of possibility in any way, shape, or form.
Or it's bought for someone and never played. Found. Like
happens.
It absolutely happens. We saw with the bunch of like a sealed Metroid or something that happened a couple of years ago. There was a news item. Oh, they found it. They bought it and never played the damn thing.
I always think it's so weird, but like, yeah, it definitely happens. Vani was telling me the other day that she still has a sealed copy of Jurassic Park on VHS because both her and her brother got a copy for Christmas, and you know, only one was open.
What is it?
Sealed.
That's and it's right. Like you can go return stuff, but how often do people actually like? It's weird how it's weird that there are people who don't return things, and how often that will happen.
Oh, it's a hassle. You got to stand in line.
Especially if it's a gift. If it was a gift from someone, you got to get a hold of them and find out where they got it from and et cetera.
The next one is Resident Evil PlayStation Long Box, which I do have one. Not sealed, but I have one. $264,000. Quarter of a mil. You can buy a house in a large chunk of the U.S. with that. A decent house. The same exact copy went for $38,400. Carl suggested that since it was the same image used, it wasn't a new image, that it was actually, it never left their offices, potentially.
Mm.
And then they reported the next ones we'll go through, all the ones I have bolded here, were potentially the same seller, because this the same October 2021 auction, he reported several of these games and being sold again, same exact copy in November 2023. Zelda 2, 9.8. $102,000. 2 years later, the same copy, $14,400. They lost about $90,000 on that. They lost $230,000 about on the other one. So now we're up to about, they lost about Pat Math, like $320,000. Russian Attack 9.4. I can't believe we lived in a world where a Russian Attack went for $43,000, but it did. The same copy then went for $7,800. Still way too much for Russian Attack, and I love Russian Attack.
Good game.
So that's $34,000. That was an NES Punk video Ian never saw as well. An early one from 2009.
No, I did see that, actually. I saw more of your early ones.
Well, that's weird. The next was another long box, a Twisted Metal long box, $87,000. The same one sold for $17,000. Now we're at a loss about $400,000 between just these few games. And a Final Fantasy VII, 9.8, $18,000. Lost about 12,000, 6,600. So we're talking about just these games that Carl identified from probably this one person lost about $430,000.
Yes.
In a year, excuse me, 2 years. That's not a good investment. So my thought I put down here was, how do we know these games were ever paid for? And that's something I come back to a lot in all this bubble, is that it only takes a certain percentage of these to be not paid for, or shield built up by a couple of people that never plan on paying for it, in order to explode a market on some of these games. The long box games, we've seen a couple here, PlayStation 1 games, Zelda 2 that you know is not rare at all, that you're going to make, you and your buddies to then start to sell these to other idiots for tens of thousands of dollars. That's all it takes. Because remember, we talked about this before and confirmed by folks that if these aren't paid for, you'll never find out.
Sure.
And maybe this is just 2 years later, they sell them. I'm not saying this happened, but either someone lost a ton of money, hundreds of thousands, or they never paid for. The next one we comment on, you want to talk about Tecmo Bowl?
So Tecmo Bowl went from 144K at 9.6 A+.
No, from 9.4
A+. I'm sorry, went from a 9.4 A+ at 144K to a 9.6 A+ at 4.9K. We actually brought this one up.
Yep.
We already brought this one up, so that's not new. But yeah, 4.9K, and that's just an insane $140,000 eating it. I mean, that's nuts.
At least because you had a worse condition copy.
Sure.
It could be more. It's probably more than that. And again, this is people guessing at anything. Tecmo Bowl, it was popular when it came out. Yeah, it's not popular now. There's no legacy anymore to this. You know, like it doesn't.
I mean, on the cusp of a brave new world of financial opportunities, you know, people will find excuses for anything to, you know, to think that anything will be popular. Zelda 2. Oh, I mean, it's Zelda, so it's going to be huge, but it's not the original Zelda. It's not everyone's favorite game, and it was super common. Tecmo Bowl, yeah, people love it, but no one needs to have the original Tecmo Bowl on their shelf. It's not something that anyone would ever collect.
Sure. Next one is a Wii game that he brought up. This is pure, unbridled greed and speculation.
We talked about this one, too. We definitely talked about this one.
Poke Park?
We also talked about the Sonic.
Oh, we definitely did the Sonic. Well, you're getting ahead of ourselves, Ian. So this was a Wii game that I know nothing about. You know about the Pokemon stuff. I don't. I'm too old. I'm a boomer. A Wii game, 9.8 A++, about 23,000, down to $600. It could even crack $1,000. Holy shit.
That's pretty intense.
That's you just ate that one bad. Here comes the Sonic one, which is one of my favorite ones. Sonic, 9.6 $312,000, which wasn't the most expensive one, by the way. There was a B-plus that went for, I think, $360, remember? $360! $312,000, $38,400. A 9.4A also sold for $420 on Golden Auctions. And then fast forward a couple years, $28,000.8, 9.4. Which is still a lot of money, but we're talking both of these individuals lost over $300,000 about. Like, we're talking this is like insane. Insane. And just for going back to like sealed games and protecting, and this is just something I did silly. I randomly got three Genesis games off my shelf.
Uh-huh.
I got Captain America and the Avengers off my shelf. Captain America. I got Muhammad Ali Heavyweight Boxing, which is a strange choice because he was way retired by then, but whatever. And then Fatal Labyrinth.
Yeah, but it's just one of those names. I mean, that's known.
And then Fatal Labyrinth, one of the early Black Grid games. And just because, like, obviously, you talk about grading stuff because you are grading the boxes as well. That gets lost in the whole shuffle, that this is kind of a point in this, is that you're grading conditions, and then if it happens to be sealed, like, it is not easy to like do good damage to a Genesis case. Like, I'm looking at these cases and I'm like, these are all in pretty damn good shape. Obviously the hang tab could be ripped off, but if not, like, these are hard plastic that are also protected by a plastic sleeve that goes around it anyway to protect the insert. So Genesis games do a damn good job on their own being protected. That's just an aside that I thought about. It's like, if you
the Genesis games are just about the strongest cases.
They're tanks.
I remember us having these complaints when we first talked about game collecting, is that if you're just looking at it from a protection angle, they're in the Humvees of game cases.
Yes. These are hard plastic cases. Like, you look at the edge. Oh, the plastic insert cover is frayed a little bit. Like, there's not real, like, you have to go out of your way to damage a Genesis game, or probably a lot of these CD games. You can scratch a TurboGrafx game, like the Hue card case. Like, it's going to take some effort. Again, another reason why a lot of this is so fucking dumb. And it's also stupid. Like, I own some Genesis games sealed in Master System. I have like a handful. The seals are never perfect anyway, because they always fuck up around the hang tape part. They always get weird and cracked and stuff. And anyway, that's all. We got a few more. We talked about this one, a Mario Kart 64, 9.6 A++++, $144,000 down to $36,000. These were all the people were whining and copium. Remember on Instagram, they're like, oh, they auctioned it too soon. Another one, remember?
Yeah,
it's like, okay, what do you want to wait 5 years? There's tons of these out there, not tons, but you know what I'm saying. Same thing with the Smash Brother. It went for the same price, which is weird, $144,000. The same copy, $15,600. A Legend of Zelda, 9.6 A+. Two copies at different times went for the same price. Again, sketchy. $146,000 down to $14,400. And then our favorite, the biggest drop, not percentage-wise, but terms of monetary value, is still the king, which set this all off. The Super Mario 64, 9.8. It was a $1.5 million down to $800,000 a few months later in fall 2021 at Golden Auctions. And the same Golden Auctions we talked about, Carl didn't mention it because he wanted to stick to all the same technical grades. There was a VGA 95 gold, which is VGA's highest grade, went for only $250,000 that fall. So already that game dropped $1.25 million in a few months. technically. It's ridiculous.
Yikes.
So getting back to the point before that Ian first brought up, now when I search for sold listings, I used to like Ian when I edit the podcast, we want to see how much Super Mario 64 has dropped. Well, search for Super Mario 64 or search for Super Mario Kart, click by highest prices or by date. You can see like them all with the prices sold. Heritage Auctions doesn't allow you to do that anymore. You have to click a button to go to the page to see the price. They don't want you to be an informed buyer, it looks like. To me, at least. That's my opinion. They want you to be as uninformed as humanly possible when looking up the history of these games. That's always a great sign, right? I mean, what else can you say?
Yeah. I mean, like obfuscating the info, especially when it used to be there, is a big tell. It'd be one thing if like the site opened and that just wasn't like a thing they had and you're like, oh, that's dumb. But to have it and then take that away, yeah, you're trying to hide something.
Meanwhile, the population reports on WADA, have they updated since June still? Let's see. Because whenever we talked about this last, they weren't updated since June.
I have a feeling they probably haven't been. But
Nintendo 64. June. I'll just do one more. I'll do NES. I'll do the OG one here. Nintendo Entertainment System. Yes, June. Almost half a year, fellas. Let's get those updated soon. Are we at the bottom, Ian? Should we buy the dip? I've seen a couple of YouTubers maybe comment about that like talking about this stuff and saying this is good.
We should not buy the dip. We should not buy the dip.
Even if you like wanted just to collect these things, not to speculate, do you think we've hit the rock bottom or could these go lower?
No, these can go lower. They can always go lower.
That's
absolutely.
It's called the dead cat bounce in stocks. It means when things hit bottom, everyone thinks, well, it's going to go back up, that we have to buy now. So then you'll see a spike and then it dies again.
Right.
I don't even think we're at that yet, but we'll get to the point where people will think where it's at the lowest possible. More money will come in. Fresh money comes back in because they're speculating probably to fuel to go back up, then it'll go back up a little bit, and then it'll die again and get even worse. I mean, it happens with stocks and everything. It's just how human nature is. You think it's at the bottom? Throw some money at it, because now it's time to make money.
I just think we'll see less sales coming up. I mean, people who need the money they have invested in this will try to offload it, but I think we're just going to see less sales. People are going to hold on to it, because every sale that goes out there that gets lower and lower is, you know, another, you know, sign of the market dying. And they don't want to put the proof out.
Well, I'm getting the mailers. They're really trying to diversify what they're selling, like Heritage Auctions. They're really trying to diversify, like more consoles I've seen, like original art, which is cool. Like original, like the art from Bionic Commando. That's actually like interesting because it's like one of a kind art piece.
Yeah.
More like Nintendo Powers. I think Howard Phillips is auctioning off a bunch of his copies of Nintendo Power. It's interesting. He doesn't have the first Fun Club newsletter, which I don't. He's of that in his collection. I think they're doing VidPro game cards. They're auctioning up at Heritage Auctions. That's desperate. That is desperate. Once you're auctioning up VidPro game cards, the things they have at Toys R Us where you flip up and see the information on the back of the box before you take it. Wow. That's, we're getting into desperate times then for stuff. I'm not saying there's gonna be nothing left to ever auction, but, they're on Heritage Auctions, and I love these, is a complete in-box zipper Bishu green NES controller. And, that's what's on Heritage Auctions. Are you serious? I'm shocked.
Yeah, that's...
It's a new condition, apparently. That's still shocking that's on Heritage Auctions. Hell, I might bid on that because I love the zipper different colors. They have a pink one, they have a yellow one, they have a blue one on that. Anyway, so there you have it, Ian. That's our Heritage Auctions update. Don't buy the dip unless you actually want to own these things and hold on to them.
Or it's for chips or vegetables or crudite or something.
This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by RexMD. Guys, going to the doctor to talk about your issues can be a problem. First, you got to book an appointment. Then you got to go and wait in the waiting room before you talk to the doctor. Then sometimes it can be a little bit embarrassing to talk about issues that could be a little bit personal. Well, here's the thing. Most men's health issues have really simple solutions. And RexMD is all about simple solutions.
RexMD makes getting generic and branded Viagra or Cialis easy. Everything's online. even the prescription, and they deliver to your door. There's no office visits, no talking to a receptionist. It's super simple. Did you know that Viagra can cost around $90 a pill? But RexMD has generic Viagra for as low as just $2 a pill. Just fill out a quick medical questionnaire on their website, and a doctor will review your situation and prescribe you generic Viagra if appropriate. Your medication gets shipped right to your door with free two-day shipping. It's fast, simple, and cheap, and you can access your U.S.-licensed RexMD physician anytime you need afterwards. RexMD has helped over 300,000 guys get generic Viagra quickly and conveniently. RexMD just works, and it works the very first night.
Act now to take advantage of their best deal yet by heading to RexMD.com/CU podcast. Our exclusive Black Friday deal will save up to 95% off, where you'll only pay $2 per dosage, plus a free gift and a $100 credit during this limited time offer. Starter packs of generic Viagra or Cialis are now available for our listeners to get started. That's RexMD.com/CU podcast for up to 95% off and a free gift and a $100 store credit. Give the gift of pleasure this year with RexMD.
So, the Marvel Universe, it's in a little bit of trouble.
The Cinematic Universe, Ian? The MCU?
The Cinematic Universe. I haven't seen a Marvel movie since Doctor Strange.
Two, which was what, last summer of last year?
Yeah, I don't even remember. And I enjoyed it greatly. I thought it was one of the better Marvel movies.
It was May of last year? Wow, that was like a year and a half. Holy shit.
So when one hits, I mean, there are still some good movies that can come out of there. But the mainline Marvel stuff is, the stuff that really kind of counts for whatever phase they're on.
Phase five? Are we in phase five, I think?
I thought phase four. I was trying to get into phase five. I think that's the problem. We're kind of stuck at the end of phase four and we don't know where we're going to go because of the majors stuff.
I was going to say, but we have to get past phase five because then you get to the new Avengers movie. Like, what phase are we in?
I don't know. And I don't know that Marvel really knows what phase they're in either.
Gotcha.
So what has been bringing up, a lot of this, this talk is, the fact that, the Marvels, absolutely tanked.
We're in phase five.
I don't even remember what phase four was then. initial tracking, it was supposed to, they were thinking it would bring in 75 to 80 million. And then it shrank to 60 to 65 million. There's bad buzz. People couldn't, do the promotion for it because of SAG-AFTRA, the strike. It ended up breaking the record for worst opening of any of the 33 Marvel movies. The previous was 55.4 million, which was The Incredible Hulk, and Ant-Man, which I actually liked, but I didn't see it until afterwards. I think a lot of people didn't see the first Ant-Man until after it left theaters. That was 57.2 million. This pulled in 47 million in its opening weekend. 47 million.
Which was worse than the Flash movie, I believe, that came out.
Probably. That's real bad. It's getting a lot of people to kind of look at it and say, well, what needs to be done? And, you read through these articles and so much of this stuff is just fucking common knowledge. Like, yes. And they act like they're having the thoughts of the days, but they're like, people might be hitting Marvel fatigue. No fucking shit. They're hitting Marvel fatigue. You've released 33 Marvel movies since 2008. 33.
Flash did 55 million and that looked fucking awful, by the way. And that did 55 million the first weekend.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would watch the Marvels handover. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, it won't be as bad. Flash. Yeah, I wasn't shocked when I saw the estimates. I'm like, no, it's going to be worse. There was zero buzz about this, and any interviews or late night appearances were not going to help. We're 5 years out of Captain Marvel. That was almost five years ago that came out, 2019.
And a strange movie too, because it took place in the past.
March 8th. That's almost 5 years ago that came out. And that was sort of like, well, this is interesting. It was the first, you know, female starring Marvel movie. And we were in the middle of the build up to freaking Endgame. So it was like, wow, this is, you have to see this. Remember, it was so hot back then. And remember, that because of that success, they put her into, they were going to put her into Endgame, I read originally, but it did so well. It's like, we got to get her in there. You know, the end of Endgame, I have huge problems with it seems slapdash. I'm not satisfied with it. Anyway, Infinity War is
bad. It's very bad.
Infinity War is
I look back on it, and it was a wholly unsatisfying end to that whole scenario, but I still don't regret my time. And I
I don't either.
But I think that the problem that they're having now is, I mean, yes, it's Marvel exhaustion, which ties into what I'm going to say, and I've said it before. It's banking on properties that don't have. They blew their load in the first three phases. They pulled out all these. Iron Man wasn't always big, but they used all of these big names. They used all of their A-listers, and now they're left with smaller characters, which can be interesting. It's what I want to see, but they don't. It does not feel like there is any cohesive vision like there was in the first three in the lead up to Endgame. And even in the best of times, even with the best movies that they could put out since 2019, they could be firing on all cylinders. I think one of the problems with the Marvel Cinematic Universe is it's a big ask to ask people to keep up on movies the way they did during the first three phases. It is one of those things that I feel like captures an audience and captures I don't know. I mean, it's almost like a cultural thing. Everyone was watching them. You know, you didn't know anyone who didn't go see
them. It was fresh. There was never something like that before.
And personally, I said this all the way back then, I tapped out. Like, that was fun, but I don't need to do this again. I don't need to make sure I'm seeing three movies a year and trying to keep up on all this shit. Well, I just don't need to.
Well, here's the thing. They dug their own grave.
They're doing what Star Wars did. They just, I mean, it's overexposure. When they jumped into streaming the TV shows, I kind of knew that was it. They were just going to be spreading themselves too thin.
That's part of it. Streaming has ruined entertainment in general. That's a whole other conversation. It's diluted it, made it unimportant. No one cares. It's totally devalued entertainment, which is one of the reasons why they had these strikes. They dug their own grave, though, because they had this. From what I read, it didn't start as a 10-year plan, but became a 10-year plan.
Yes.
Which we're going to follow through with Thanos, a big thing. That's great, but that's not how comic books works. And that's not how the comic book characters work. These characters exist for decades and decades. You can't just get rid of this. And I said this years ago. You can't just get rid of the big characters that we are attached to and think that we're not going to care. You can't get rid of Steve Rogers and Iron Man and think that it's going to be business as usual and just replace them with other characters. That's not how comic books works. That's not how anything works.
I would say that the Marvel Cinematic Universe as a whole big project, 10 years, is not how comics work.
Sure.
Comics have events.
Yes.
Comics share worlds when it's convenient. But comics also find a way to just break what's going on, take your same character and be like, that wasn't going so great, so we're going to put him in a new story.
Sure.
We can have a character being written by multiple people. There can be different runs. X-Men does it. Mm-hmm. Batman does it. And DC, to their credit, is slowly starting to realize that. What with the Batman not being their main Batman movie, apparently, like there's going to be another Batman, but they will still do another The Batman. They can have multiple takes on a character, and not everything needs to be connected. Again, it worked once, but they kind of took the summer event thing that happens in comics and they blew it out to like a 10-year thing.
Which worked fine, but now it's like, well, now how do you ever get back that high? You're never going to reach that height ever again.
Well, no, you can't. Ever. And it also shows the cracks in doing it, and it shows how much of it, especially if there was no 10-year plan, which I believe, it shows just how much of it was lightning in a bottle and striking while the iron was hot. And that's what I read through these articles, and it makes me want to smash my head against a rock, because people who make money are not necessarily smart people. They're all talking about how they couldn't have seen this coming. And it's like, no, you clearly couldn't have seen this coming.
No, we literally talked about this stuff years ago. We talked about this is going to be bad.
Everyone like, did. Yeah. But I mean, it's all just fucking run the money through the juicer until sure. there's nothing
and,
left to do.
And that was before Disney Plus. Yes. We're like, well, what happens when you have your B-listers and C-listers come along? So and it's not the fact also that you have B-listers and C-listers. It's how you're introducing them. So this Marvel's movie comes out, and two of the three characters I would only know if I was watching their shows on Disney Plus. So like if I'm a casual person, this is advertising me. I'm like, who the hell are these other two people? I have no idea who they are.
Monica Rambeau introduced in.
Yeah, when she was nine, she was in.
Right. Yeah.
It was her mom in the movie.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So her I had to have seen.
Like, it was her daughter. I'm like, no, that's the other way around.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So you had to have seen WandaVision and see her introduced in that. And then the Marvel, the Miss Marvel show, you'd have to see that. Not only that, seen the characters and then liked them enough to then go see the movie. That's a big ask for a lot of people. A big ask to see that.
Well, my thing is like, I love Monica Rambeau, but I don't love her for this role. So,
sure.
I mean, my love of her comes from different comics. It comes from Next Wave, Agents of Hate, and stuff like that. Like, this is a character that I would be excited to see on the big screen.
Doing something else?
But they're putting, yeah, it's kind of strange.
It's just mishmash. Oh, they have Marvel in the name, and she was one of the, I know she was the Captain Marvel in the 80s, I remember. During like Secret Wars, that's the only thing I know about her. She was like she was a replacement Captain Marvel. That's all I know. But anyway,
correct.
That's the only thing I know her from. I'm like, oh, this must be the same Captain Marvel from back then. The point is this: you have to give the audience a. This is so stupid. It's common sense. I feel like getting in the room with them and be like, you have to give the people a reason to get behind these characters and see them in the movie theater. You have to divorce yourself from this of people being. Everyone's involved in the whole ecosystem where we're going to make hundreds of millions because everyone's watching the Disney Plus shows. That's not happening. That's not how this works.
Well, and that's when I go back to saying that people have tapped out. That's the issue. So many of those movies in the original few years, you know, the original phases would have done far less numbers if we weren't all caught up in the hype of making sure we see everything so that we know what's going on.
And that was only two movies a year for the first like 7-8 years. Two movies. And then it went to three. That's fine. But now when it's three movies or maybe four, and now I got to watch three Disney Plus shows on top, I'm done. Because now
When I think of like Iron Man 3 and I liked the original Captain Marvel. But the original Captain Marvel, these are movies that I think at this point people were going to because it was part of the experience, not because they saw a trailer for an Iron Man 3 movie and said, that looks like the type of movie I'd go see.
Well, but
they
Iron Man
just watching it because it was the next.
But Iron Man 3 was established at that point as a brand. That was after Avengers. So, like, you know.
I loved Iron Man
3. I liked it a lot. And it was a one-off. It had no real connection to anything else. It was a palate cleanser.
So maybe that wasn't the best one to use, but that goes back to what I was saying previously. You can make these movies as one-offs. You don't have to find a way to tie them to something every single time.
Iron Man 3 is a Christmas movie, by the way.
It is a Christmas
movie. Like, oh, Shane Black's
movie. It's a road trip holiday movie is what it is, with a really bad, shitty CG ending, but it's a fun movie.
Shane Black likes writing Christmas movies. Like, I mean, you know, go back to Lethal Weapon was during Christmas too. Just because Christmas is any more Christmas movies. That's good movie. And also you got to go see, he did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You've seen that. That's excellent. Robert Downey Jr.
I have not seen that.
You never saw Kiss His Baby? Oh, that's great.
No. With Val Kilmer. I know I need to, but I've never seen it.
And then, which they're supposed to do a sequel to it. One of the best movies I've seen in the past 10 years, The Nice Guys. That was already 7 years ago. Have you seen The Nice Guys?
I've never seen that, but I heard it was great.
It was excellent. It was excellent. And they're talking about doing another one. Go see those. The same sort of, you know.
I did hear that,
buddy.
That's what put it in my mind again, like a couple of weeks ago, as someone was talking about it. I was like, you know, I never watched that.
Oh, Nice Guys is like one of those movies you can probably watch like every other week, and it wouldn't get old.
Just like one of those ones that would make good background noise.
Yeah, because the characters and the writing's so good, you know, and the acting. So anyway, so how do you fix all this? I don't know if you can. Plus, we're dealing with all the Jonathan Majors legal stuff, which we don't know where we're going with there. We have no idea where that's going to go. But that's your big villain. So it's like supposedly the end of this Loki season. Spoilers. They give themselves an out if they were going to change the main villain. So it's like, oh boy, what do we do?
They got to give themselves an out, and they need to get back on a plan. And I mean, you know, DC kept saying for years and years, we're going to get back on a plan. We're going to get back on a plan. But as DC has shown, it's not that easy to get back on a plan and stay on a plan with this many moving parts. Once again, Marvel caught lightning in a bottle and all the pieces were there at the right time in the right place. But they're proving that, you know, maybe DC and Warner Brothers weren't just idiots. They were. I mean, no one needed Zack Snyder at the helm, but maybe it's just really difficult to do this sort of thing.
Sure, because it only happened once successfully. It's only happened once.
Cinematic universes did not exist before this. They were just movies with what was called sequels. That's how you built the Alien cinematic universe. You made multiple Aliens movies. That's totally different.
And then AV did a couple of bad AVP movies. He did a few of those.
One was okay. The second one I still haven't actually seen.
That looks terrible. Remember, there's an Aquaman movie coming out next month. Oh, my God. That's finally coming out. Holy shit.
You know what? I wanted to see the original Aquaman because I saw
it in theaters.
And I like Jason Momoa. Yes, but you and every other person told me it was long and boring. And that was boring. The death knell. If everyone had told me it was great good, I would have gone to see it. But if everyone had told me it was really bad for any reason other than it being boring and long, I probably would have seen it. I have no desire to sit down and watch a long, boring movie.
But I do like Patrick Wilson. He was great in it as a villain. Patrick Wilson's
Black
great.
Manta?
What?
Was he Black Manta?
No. He was the Patrick Wilson was his brother or the vying for the throne underwater.
Oh, okay. I know Black Manta's in this new one.
Oh, he was in the first one, too.
Oh, okay.
Smaller role.
I don't know who these people are.
I don't remember anything about the movie. You know Patrick Wilson?
No, I don't know.
Patrick Wilson is in all those horror movies. He's like one of the couples that were based on the real-life sham couple. And he was in Watchmen. He was Night Owl in Watchmen.
I never saw the Watchmen.
Patrick Wilson's in a lot of things. He's a great actor. And he's Patrick, so he's cute, like all of us.
Oh!
Yeah, he's good. He's great.
Yeah, I've definitely seen him in things, but what the fuck have I seen him in?
He's in a lot of like smaller.
He's
medium
in Conjuring and stuff.
Yeah, the Conjuring. He's the Mr. Conjuring. He's in all those for the most part.
Oh, okay.
That's a cinematic universe. Actually, that's
succeeded. And I gotta watch those.
There's like 12 movies in that cinematic universe. Believe it or not.
I know. I'm well aware.
So sorry to all the Conjuring fans out there. I've only seen a couple of movies and they're pretty good. But there's like offshoots from that universe.
Like one of the Nun movies. I think I saw the Nun Part 2.
And there's prequels and stuff. There's short film. Like, that's a... Don't get on me, Conjuring fans, in the comments. That's a real cinematic universe.
I think that's actually pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, but they're also like small budget $20 million movies that you can take a risk with that. You
know, right. And again, not as many moving parts with something that's small and that comparatively low risk.
Yes, it's like, oh, that horror object, that doll, here's a movie about that, how that doll came to be haunted. It's like, okay, it's simple and stupid, but it's a horror movie, you know, like that's how it works,
right?
Anyway, so this is what I would do. I would go the James Bond route, treat it like comics every 5 years. Hey, why does Spider-Man look different? Well, you got a new artist. Do that with the actors. You got to recast. I'm sorry, we got to get the A-listers back at some point. That's just the way it works. You need the A-listers.
Well,
you know, that's
it. The other thing for me is I don't know that that's going to work.
What else are you going to try?
I mean, they can try, but I don't know that it's going to work. Not so soon. And the thing is I don't think anyone imagined, well, we could see it coming, but I don't think Marvel imagined that they would be in
this bad shape,
trouble this soon. You can't just bring back the original actors right now because they don't really have any interest.
That's in the Variety article. That was an option they floated. Let's get the original Avengers back.
I mean, that's going to be really difficult. I mean, those people are getting older and I think they've got some years left in them, but Downey Jr. doesn't want to fucking do it anymore.
Chris Evans doesn't want to do it.
Right. I mean, they don't want to do it. And so if you don't get them back, it's way, way too soon to replace the original actors visually.
I'm just saying.
That's just not going to work.
They did it for James Bond for 50 years. They swap out the actor and you continue on.
Yeah, but James, I mean, that became, again, over time.
Sure, but
over a greater period of time. I'm not saying they can't.
Every 10 years is a new James Bond about, by average. Every 10 years. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. You have to do that.
Yeah, but we're not there with this sort of thing yet, and I don't think it fits as well.
Is it too complex?
Because
it's a whole universe. Maybe it's too complex. It's a whole universe, not one character. Maybe that's
right. So, you know, I think it works when, at least mentally for me, it works. Like, okay, you went from the original Spider-Man movies, the Raimi movies, right?
Sure.
And then you got the Amazing Spider-Man movies, and those were completely different. And, you know, it had been a decent amount of time between the last movies that, you know, having a new actor felt right. But yes, I think part of it is because it's in the same universe and you're going to have these people. Basically, you'd have to recast everything for me to look at it. It would be way too weird to have a new Captain America interacting with, say, the Captain Marvel that he had worked with.
Well, that's one of the reasons I think that's one of the reasons why they're so desperate to build this multiverse shit. The past 3 years, 4 years have been wasted on this multiverse shit. That's been Multitude of Madness, Spider-Man No Way Home, Loki season 1 and 2, WandaVision. They're throwing everything at the multiverse. I'm sure it's also in the new Marvels movie at some point. Obviously, Quantumania. They're banking on the multiverse in order to reset this in like 2 years. That's right. What they're doing. They should have just really got in Fantastic Four and X-Men lickety fucking split before this whole multiverse. They should just figure that out. One movie, multiverse, we're bringing shit in. That could have solved a lot of these problems. That could have solved a lot of it with X-Men and Fantastic Four, and then you're off and running, and that buys you time with all the other problems.
And I think COVID definitely has something to do it too, because if that hadn't happened, I think we would be looking at Marvel. I think we'd be looking at X-Men and Avengers movies early next year. I think the pacing was totally to kind of have an interim period. I think the initial idea was to have Endgame in 2019. Have an interim period of movies that kind of set up a transition that would be over by 2023 or 2024 at the latest, and then start on your next tent poles. And that has not happened.
Well, we're 5 years from Infinity War, almost. We're 4.5 years from Endgame, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So I think originally they probably wanted to have Avengers by now.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Wanted. Like, I'm saying at the latest, early 2024 would have been Avengers.
And now it's going to be like mid 25, probably, is what it's going to be. So we'll see. I love Guardians of the Galaxy 3, but again, that was disconnected from everything else. That was his own thing.
That's probably why it worked. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard it's fantastic.
And now it's like, okay, we have all these B and C listers, honestly. Right. Like, Iron Man was a B-lister, you know. Some of these characters are C-listers that they're trying to push. And it's like, it's not going to work. I go back to, like, how do you introduce these characters? Look at the comics. There was an entire comic that I used to love seeing the cheap issues of called Marvel Team-Up. And the entire run was Spider-Man teaming up with a lesser-known hero every fucking issue for the most part. In order to push them up. Like, that's one of the ways you do this, is that you have to pair them with a bigger hero somehow, but that's tough to do because this is not comics, it's movies. Obviously it's tougher to do that and shows, but just pushing a new hero just because it's an MCU doesn't mean they're going to be successful. We're not at that point anymore. There's going to be winners and losers. We've seen enough of this. We have fatigue, or maybe we're just superhero fatigued. Oppenheimer made almost $1 billion. Barbie did $1 billion. Maybe we're just now, we grew up and we want movies that aren't just people bashing things with superpowers. That's part of it too. It can happen.
Yeah.
All right, this was fun, right, Ian?
Yeah, it was.
We got you up before 4:30, so there you go, see?
Well, I'm going to go convalesce because I've got an Aqua concert to go to tomorrow and I want to be good and healthy, and D&D to play on Sunday, so I gotta get straight.
Remember, if you want to listen to us ramble about more stuff, patreon.com/CU podcast. You can find a bunch of dozens and dozens like, oh, 60 plus or so of us railing about stuff that you've never seen on YouTube before. So, you know, check it out.
And I mean, you can check out my writing this past week. Not only did I also ramble about Othello, but an even nerdier recent pastime of mine,
nerdier,
Cellular Automata. So go have fun.
All right. I don't know what that is, but it sounds like a horror movie.
Cellular Conway's Game of Life. Remember that on Windows?
The Game of Life?
Conway's Game of Life.
It was on Windows? No, I didn't have that in Windows.
Okay. I'll explain it to you some other time.
All right. That'll be the next exclusive.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you later, everyone. Bye.